You are listening to Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are. We now present the Catechism Hour, hosted by Brother Justin Bunyan.
Welcome to the Catechism Hour with me, Brother Justin Bunyan of the Heralds of the Gospel. And today we are going to continue looking at different apparitions of Our Lady that happened in different places around the world. Last week we were looking at the miracle of Our Lady of Genazzano, Our Lady of Good Counsel. Today we're going to look at one that brings us to the Americas, one that's very near and dear to those who come from Colombia or Ecuador, because it's a miracle that happened in Ecuador, and I'm sorry, within the southern part of Colombia, and it's known as Our Lady of Las Lajas. Okay, so let's start with the idea of what is a laja. A laja is a slab of stone, and it's Our Lady of the Slabs. And we're going to get into why this is so important. So let's go back to what is the miracle, what happened. In many of the miracles of South and Central America, it revolves around the evangelization of the natives. It was as though Our Lady was making a special push towards them, giving them the preferential option, if you may say. We have Our Lady of Cuatamoto in Venezuela. We have Our Lady of Guadalupe in Mexico. We get Our Lady of Las Lajas in Colombia. And there are many others, but these are the major ones. So what happened? Well, let's go through some of the story, and then we'll build on to that story, and then we'll move from there. So there's a miraculous event in 1754. When a native woman, Maria Menzies de Quiones, and her deaf-mute daughter, Rosa, were caught in a very terrible and strong storm. Now, when you're in the mountains, those who are acquainted with the Rocky Mountains, storms seem to be extra powerful when they're in the mountains. It's just the whole element of it, the height, the altitude, the way the winds blow, it's pretty scary. So they're caught in this strong storm. The two sought refuge between these two slabs in the mountains, to these two lajas. When two Maria's surprise, her daughter, Rosa, exclaimed, "The woman is calling to me," and pointed to an illuminated silhouette over at the slab. This apparition of Our Lady started a very popular pilgrimage to the site, and there's been countless healings in this same place. The image of Our Lady and Our Lord are still visible until today Now, what's interesting about that is that it's in the stone. It's an image of Our Lady that is in the stone. And it's beautiful. It is artistic. And no one figures out yet how Our Lady image was superimposed onto the stone. It's in the stone. It's not just on it. The existence of a shrine at this location is recorded in the accounts of many of the friars who were in the area evangelizing. And these are recorded and recounted from 1756 to 1764. The first shrine was built there in the middle of the 18th century, made from straw and wood. And then later it was replaced in 1802. Which in turn was extended and connected to the opposite side of the canyon with a bridge. The current church was built between January 1, 1916 and August the 20th, 1949. Built, you know, this is always the case. It's built on the pennies of the poor. It's built on the local churchgoers, the people who came on pilgrimage. They would give gifts, and that's what built this church. It took a long time, but it is a beauty. It raises 100 meters, so 330 feet above the bottom of the canyon, and is connected to the opposite side of the canyon by a 50-meter bridge, or 160-foot bridge. So the church of the Shrine of Our Lady at Las Lajas is a basilica. So it's something that we should acquaint ourselves with. The tradition of pilgrimage there for those who are deaf, those who are mute, those who are in need of healing is amazing. What's interesting also is that the woman kept quiet about the miracle until something even more incredible happened. When Rosa died, her daughter died, Maria returned to the place where she had seen the Virgin Mary pray for her daughter's soul. The Virgin then miraculously revived Rosa. Mother and daughter could no longer keep quiet about such a miracle. The first shrine was built a few years after the apparitions. So it's these type of miraculous events that really marked the evangelization in those regions. It's like what they say in Mexico. In Mexico, they say that the population of Mexico is about 60% Catholic, but 100% Guadalupan. And the same goes for many of these other locations. Their attachment to the Mother of God is so great, which is interesting, and you can be certain that Our Lady is going to bring them towards her son. The element that is important for us to see when we look at these apparitions of Our Lady are that it's a way in which Our Lady has to get involved in the evangelization of these people. Find a means to reach them, touch them, help them. Another one I like to do on a different day would be Our Lady of Good Health in southern India, Tamil Nadu. And again, it's someone in need. And he encounters Our Lady, and Our Lady asks for something. And the boy gives of what he doesn't have. And then Our Lady gives him a superabundance of what he needs and cures him. So you may say there are two different apparitions, two different miracles that are involved in this story. One is the story of Our Lady with Maria and Rosa, right? Rosa now is able to hear, she's able to speak, and she dies, and she's resurrected. But the other one, visible for everyone, is the image of Our Lady of Las Lajas, which is on this stone slab, and no one knows how it got there. And when they did scientific studies, it even caused more questions. So it's something for us, an interesting point for us to look at. The good that it caused is amazing. Our Lady, like Guadalupe, is part native. The image is clear that she is not a peninsulare, one who came from Spain. She is one of them. And one of the phrases that Rosa uses to her mother is that the Metisa wants to speak to me. So the one who's mixed, she's one of us. And I think that's very interesting in the question of our own relationship with Our Lady, is that she comes to us looking like us because our mother has to be like us. This element of, you know, of encounter is very important with us in our spiritual lives, because what happens many a time is that our faith becomes distant. It becomes other. And there was a philosopher in the post-war era, which Martin Buber, he had this idea about our relationship with God, and that it couldn't be, it had to be an I-thou relationship. It had to be a relationship between the Creator and ourselves, but it had to be close enough that we could speak. You look at ourselves and you ask that question and say, you know, when I pray my rosary, when I go to church, we gather for prayer before a meal, but how does my faith really touch me? How does it get involved? Is it part of my life? And those of us who live in North America, we end up with a faith that is very mechanical. We end up with a faith that's very, very, you may say, academic. We know the truths. We know that the processes in which we receive sacraments, we know the processes. We can pass tests. But then you ask the question, does it affect my life? Does it have a relational element within my life? And when we reach this point, the answer many a time becomes a no. So we may go to church, but it's like that of a robot. We may go to do many things that our Catholic faith asks of us, but there's no result, there's no answer. And then what happens, and this I've seen this many, many times, Toronto is an interesting city for this, because Toronto being so cosmopolitan, you see first generation people, you see second generation, you third and fourth and fifth. And the ones who come from different cultural realities, where the faith has, you might say, more rubber on the road, it affects much more their lives. Their faith may have less structure. It may have less knowledge in the absolute sense. But the faith has more resonance within their lives. And what happens is that when they're in need, a tragedy touches their lives, or a moral tragedy touches their lives, they are far, far more apt to fly towards God and His sacraments than, per se, one of our quote-unquote Canadians who have the structures. But when things come tumbling down and when faith is questioned, we become much more, I might say, the veneers come down and we show what we truly are, which is practical atheists. We don't believe. We believe in a process. But when things get bad, it's as though we cling to ourselves. And that's when we come tumbling down. So So I'm going to go back to the story. We're going to wind it back a little bit. We're going to get in some more details. So Maria and Rosa, they are from the town. They were from a town in the valley area called Pontassi. And they often walked 6 miles between their village and the neighboring one of Isales. While making that journey and approaching this place called Las Lajas, again, Las Lajas means slabs, where the trail passes through a deep gorge of the river, they encounter this storm. And encountering the storm, they need to take cover. It is said that Maria never liked this part of the trail because there were rumors that the caves might be haunted. And unfortunately, superstitions are the last things to die. We have peoples of Europe who have been Christians for thousands of years who cling to superstitions. And no different can be for any people. As they're going across this area, the storm has engulfed them. Maria, who's carrying her daughter on her back, looking for a place to hide from the storm, hide in the cave. The child got down from her back to play. The next thing she knew, Rosa is now crying out, not scared, saying, "Mother, the Metisa is here with a boy in her arms." Now, remember, there's the superstition that the place is haunted. And the distance they had from their conversion to Christianity, from their local indigenous religions, isn't very far. So they're frightened. But what frightened her more, and I already mentioned this before, is the fact that the daughter had spoken for the first time. You may say the first time she encounters her voice is to talk about Our Lady and Jesus. But what's interesting about this point is that this first encounter, Maria does not see the image. She's frightened. She gathers up her little girl and run off in the storm to the town. She did speak about it a little bit, but no one gave her any space. It was the babblings of a crazy lady. However, as news spread, some asked if maybe it was true. Because now this child is speaking. Everyone knew the child who was deaf and mute. Now, if any of you have ever encountered children who are born deaf, even through the most advanced treatments, their voices are impaired. Because of that fact of not being able to hear, they have difficulty speaking. That impairment is obvious. Now, we're talking about indigenous 17th century Colombia. Guess what? They don't have any treatments. And miraculously, now this girl is speaking. A few days later, Rosa disappeared from her home. After looking for her everywhere, the anguished Maria realized that her daughter must have gone to the cave. She often said that the woman was calling her. She was being called by Our Lady. She often said that the woman was calling her again and again. Maria ran to Las Lajas to find the girl kneeling in front of a splendid woman and playing affectionately with a child who had come down from her mother's arms to let the girl enjoy his divine tenderness. It's interesting here. how do we evangelize this little girl who's deaf and mute? She would never have heard the word of God. She never would have learnt it because she couldn't hear. She probably never prayed per se because, well, she couldn't speak. How does Our Lady do good to her? She encounters her. She brings her towards herself. And then through Mary, she introduces Jesus into her life. Isn't that what we want in our own spiritual lives? Maria fell to her knees before such a spectacle. She had just seen Mary and Jesus. Can you imagine that if you were there? Can you imagine the emotions that would have overtaken you? Unfortunately, humans are terrible. And she was fearful of ridicule. So Maria kept quiet about the event. Her first opportunity to try to talk about it wasn't successful. She's not trying a second time. But frequently, she and Rosa went to the cave to place flowers and candles in the rocks. Months went by, Maria and Rosa keeping their promise and keeping their secret. However, one day the girl fell gravely ill and died. A distraught Maria decided to take her, the dead daughter's body, to Las Lajas to ask Our Lady to restore the little girl's life. Pressed by sadness of Maria's unrelenting supplications, the Blessed Virgin obtained Maria's resurrection from her divine son, overflowing with joy. Maria went home. It didn't take long for a crowd to gather. Earlier the next morning, everyone was at Las Lajas, each of them wanting to check the details for themselves. That was when the miraculous image of Mary on the wall of the grotto was discovered. Imagine, until this point, there was no image. This was a path that was used by these people going from village to village. It wasn't like in the obscure area. It was an area that existed. It was there. It was on the way. And until this point, no one saw it. Maria could not recall noticing until then. Interesting. She wasn't certain, but you may say she would have seen it. She had gone there so many a time. The child Jesus in her arms, on the other side of Our Lady, St. Francis, on the other side it was St. Dominic. The Dominicans and the Franciscans were the two orders who had friars in the area working with the people. Again, this is Our Lady giving an assist to the missionaries, showing them that the friars were with her. And by doing that, they were able to have a closer relationship. Her delicate and regal features are those of a local. Again, why? Because she wants to be one with. She wants to encounter these ones and bring them to Jesus. Her eyes sparkle with a pure and friendly glow. She's very young. And she was their queen. And with that encounter, the conversion of those people were then kicked off in a way that they'd never had before. Very much like Guadalupe, this helped the evangelization move forward. And this element helps us understand, you know, many a time we have crosses and difficulties and we don't know where to go. And we think Our Lady is, oh, she's so far up there. She's so busy. She doesn't have time for me. Our Lady had time for little Rosa being deaf and mute. How many of the locals prayed for little Rosa? We have no idea. She was known. How many of them looked down and say, if only she could speak, if only she could hear, she could help her mother. How many tears were shed? And she received not just her cure, but she was also resurrected, given back her life. So we look at this, and it gives us hope. It gives us an idea that we are moving towards an element where we are together with the angels, with Our Lady. Let's ask Our Lady of Las Lajas to protect us and help us. And we're going to go into a break, and then we're going to look at another story of another apparition of Our Lady. Be back in a quick moment's time.
You are listening to the Catechism Hour, here on Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice, wherever you are. To contact us, you can tweet us at Radio Maria Can or email catechismhour@radiomaria.ca.
Welcome back. So we're going to look at the feast day for the Venezuelans, Our Lady of Guadamoto. Now, this one here is also one that is tied directly up with the indigenous population. So let's start. So when the Spanish arrived in Venezuela around 1591 in this certain region, a group of natives of the Cuauhtémoc tribe decided to abandon their land and flee towards the river, since they did not want to have anything to do with these white men or their religion that they brought with them. 50 years later, still maintaining their independence, the natives were living in small villages not far from the Spaniards' towns. Both groups lived in peace, but remained isolated from each other until 1651, when the chief of the Cuauhtémoc and his wife experienced an extraordinary vision in the ravine near the river. Upon the waters, a beautiful lady looked at them with a loving expression in her face. A small child she carried also smiled at them lovingly. The mysterious lady summoned the Indian chief and told him, "Leave the forest with your people and go to the white men in order to receive the water on the head so you'll be able to enter heaven." Our lady pretty clearly gives him marching orders. Impressed by what he had seen and heard, the chief decided to obey the beautiful lady and led his tribe to be schooled in the Christian religion. But the natives, used to the freedom of the forest, could not be accustomed to the new way of life, and they returned to their own villages with their families. Our Lady appears again, this time at the chief's humble hut. Although the Virgin presented herself surrounded by an aura, and whose rays filled the hut, she did not succeed in moving the chief, who, annoyed, tried to throw her out and even took his weapons in his hands with the intention of threatening this most inopportune woman. When he stretched out his hand angrily to catch her, she disappeared before his eyes. In the hand of the chief, a small holy card where the image of Our Lady was printed was left there instead. Now think about that. The man wants to kill her, grabs at her, and all he receives is a holy card of Our Lady. The Virgin, known in Venezuela, La Virgen de Cuauhtémoc, Our Lady of Cuauhtémoc, is a tiny relic that measures 27 millimeters high, 22 wide. The holy card's material could be parchment or tissue paper. They don't know. Our Lady is painted seated. On her lap sits the child Jesus. It seems to have been drawn with a fine pen, sketched as a portrait done in Indian ink with dots and dashes. Our Lady and the child are looking straight ahead. Their heads are erect with royal crowns upon them. The back of the throne, which supports them, has two columns joined together by an arch. Our Lady's shoulders are covered by a crimson robe with dark purple reflections, and a white veil falls over her hair. She wears a straw-colored tunic, the child a white one. The image is kept inside a richly adorned monstrance where it is preserved and presented for veneration to the faithful. At the request of the nation's bishops, on October the 7th, 1944, Pius XII declared her patroness of the Republic of Venezuela, and her canonical coronation was celebrated on the third centenary of her apparition on September the 11th, 1952. The Cardinal of Havana, Cuba, in representing Pius XII, crowned the sacred image of Our Lady of Cuauhtémoc. The Venezuelans celebrate their patroness each year on three distinct occasions. On February the 2nd, on September the 8th and the 11th, the National Sanctuary of Our Lady of Cuauhtémoc, the meeting places of the greatest pilgrimages, was declared a basilica by Pius XII on May 24th, 1949. It's interesting how this one works. Let's compare the two. At Las Lajas, Our Lady and Our Lord are there in a point of encounter. They're going towards those who have already been converted. The mother is in need. There's need involved. But there's also love. A child who is so disabled. And Our Lady calls out to the child time and time again. And the child comes back. There's a certain level of fidelity, of openness. At Quarimoto, we have the difference. We have a proud chief who doesn't listen properly. And because of that, he resorts to violence. The part of the story we don't have here, which is true, is that following this miracle, those tribes convert. And with the conversion, they change. But what's interesting about it is Our Lady's message to the chief is very clear. Go to these friars. They will pour water on your head so you can go to heaven. Straightforward. The catechetical approach is simple. Receive from them the ability to go to heaven. Our Lady isn't going into a pedantic dialogue with them. She's presenting them with the first step, which is conversion, which is the element of becoming a child of God and the ability to go to heaven, which must have been the foundational aspiration of the people to go to heaven. Remember, the apparitions of Our Lady, many times they touch that very basic element. People who feel pushed out, Our Lady tells them, I am near you. People who are suffering, I will cure you. And in this case, I give you the way to heaven. What's beautiful about it is that even though they react with anger, Our Lady still leaves them something beautiful, leaves them something miraculous, leaves them her calling card. When you're ready, come back to me. That's where people make their mistake in their lives, is that they believe that they are abandoned by God. They are abandoned by Our Lady. They are abandoned by everyone. But in reality, it's us that abandon them. And with that, we need to see within ourselves a little bit and kind of ask those big questions, which is, how is it that we enter into this ability to encounter Christ, encounter Our Lady, and Our Lady will bring us to Christ? Look at the little girl. It's the lady who calls her and brings her close. And then Our Lady gives her son. And her son gives her the confidence. So there are many, 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 accounts of these things. I'm going to read you another one, which is of the second one in the hut. Okay, this has a little bit more detail. So we're going to go with we have the synthesized version. We're going to get one a little more detailed. So here we go. A little native boy who was inwardly disapproved by his uncle's clumsy behavior, was very sorry about what had happened to the beautiful lady. He had seen her in the creek and in the hut. His heart told him that the treatment of the lady received was not good. So he carefully arranged a hiding place for the sacred image and decided to tell Juan Sanchez what had happened. The memory of the Blessed Virgin never for a moment left his spirit. What he had seen had made such a deep impression on him that he was unable to sleep. And about midnight, he slipped out of the hut and hurried to Sopo. He ran over the plains and through the forests, and was not scared of the quiet solitude of the night, nor did he fear the roar of the tiger in the jungle, nor the cries of the beasts of the grasslands. He hurried and soon covered the distance between Kuramoto and Sopo. It seems that the virgin helped him and made the journey lighter. He reached the town. Everyone was sleeping, so he snuggled up next to the door to await dawn. Juan Sanchez's wife was surprised when she opened the door of her home in the early hours of Sunday and saw the child there. The little child told her, as best as he could, everything that he had seen. With some difficulty, because it was not well expressed in his faltering Spanish, the woman called her husband and said, "Juan, yesterday afternoon, we gave leave to this child to go to Kuramoto to visit his mother. And this morning, he is here, saying that last night, the very nice lady went to the house and his uncle wanted to shoot her with a bow and arrow, took hold of her and hid her in his house." Juan smiled and did not believe what the boy had said. The child retold the story, and seeing that they still did not believe him, he said, "Go to Kuramoto now, and you will see." The little boy insisted that they go with him to confirm the truth of the fact. Finally, Juan Sanchez, to dispel all doubts, replied, "Go and get two mules and I will go with you." It was to be understood that these two surly mules roaming loose in the savannah could only be taken with a lasso, sometimes taking up to 2 hours to bring them in. The boy hurried towards the savannah, where he found the two mules together and very still, as if in a deep sleep. With the greatest of ease, he put a rope around them and brought them to the house without them showing any resistance. Juan Sanchez, seeing him bring the two mules in such a short time, was amazed and began to believe what the child had said. The group of them set off promptly to Kuramoto. Nearing near the town, the three Spaniards hid in a ditch 3 blocks from the house while the child went to his uncle's hut to search for the woman he had talked about. Fortunately for the child, his aunt and his mother were together outside on one side of the house. Unseen by anyone, the child entered the hut. Heart pounding with joy, he took possession of the miraculous image, still in the same place where his uncle had placed it. Took it to Juan Sanchez, who, upon receiving it from the child's hand, felt a deep emotion as he recognized the effigy of Mary, the august Mother of God, with Jesus on her lap, and respectfully placed it in a silver reliquary that he used to wear around his neck. Full of admiration and devotion, Juan Sanchez went to the Villa of the Holy Spirit, where he told the local priest everything that had happened. As usually happens in these cases, the priest did not believe any of the story, so Juan Sanchez went home and placed the holy relic on an altar. But the story has time and time again, it has these elements to it which kind of bring us towards the reality. Our Lady comes in search. She shows us a solution. And then we say, "Go away." We throw stones at her. We throw bows and arrows. We do everything. And Our Lady continues to try. You see, the boy is touched by a grace. He goes towards a Spanish family which he had made friends with. And he has help. Then they encounter the minister of God who doesn't believe it. And it's step after step. How many times in our lives do we have the same scenario come through? So Our Lady comes in, you know, in this encounter. In this encounter, we have these issues, what are we? Are we more like Maria and her daughter Rosa, who are journeying, you know, carrying the heavy weights of life on our backs? Or are we like this chief, proud, and with the solicitation of the Mother of God, instead of coming towards like Rosa, we encounter things to throw at Our Lady and blame her? Where are we? That's the big question to look at. The apparition, the first apparition, is so simple and straightforward. One of the points that they have when Our Lady appears is that nothing can be said, nothing can be done. That's against Catholic doctrine. When Our Lady appears to the chief, she tells him, go towards the white men and ask for the water on your head. Very simple. No highfalutin theological language. But do we understand what baptism did to us? If we understood, why don't we make it work? Why don't we act out the triple office we received through our baptism? Why don't we do apostolate with our neighbors? Why don't we get involved? Why don't we get our hands a little bit dirty? Why don't we get, as they would say in certain circles, go into the greasy corners and get in there and involve ourselves? Be there for others who are having difficulties. But no, we're too busy. We're too involved in our own lives. And because of that, we don't have time for the other. One could have been like that too. His wife could have scooted the boy away, saying, leave me alone. It's early in the morning. I have things to do. But they didn't. So let's ask in a special way today, Our Lady of Cuaramoto and Our Lady of Las Lajas, to, you know, give us the proper spirit, the spirit that is more willing to be open to the movements of grace, the movements of, of compunction, of desire, of action, and not be sitting back and uninvolved and uninterested. And because our uninterestedness and our lack of desire to be involved, that God will pass us by and we won't even know he passed. So let's ask in a special way this intercession of Our Lady and ask that we become what we're called to be. May God bless us and see you next week.
You've been listening to the Catechism Hour, hosted by Brother Justin Bunyan, here on Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are.